the welfare of the children of DAM and RAL. Can both council see the timing?
Yes, thank you.
Great, thank you. So council for appellant, you may proceed. Please state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Kenneth White. I'm an attorney from Mankato and I represent Mother DAM in this appeal. First, my client asked me specifically to thank the court for going through this process, recognizing the challenges that we all face in what are rather extraordinary times. But she wanted the opportunity for me to talk to the court and to answer whatever questions you might have about the issues that we've raised in relation to the termination of parental rights. In any termination of parental rights case, the standard of review becomes extremely significant. And here I think we're dealing in some respects with a fairly typical standard of review from a judge's factual findings, but also some legal questions where this court gets the opportunity to step in and evaluate the fact, evaluate the law on a de novo basis. The first issue that we raised before the court was whether the evidence reaches that threshold of clear and convincing standard, clear and convincing evidence, considering the record as a whole in terms of whether mother engaged in the sexual activity with the with one of her daughters that is alleged by her daughter in conversations with the foster parents, with an attorney for the foster parents, and then during the specific interviews with the girl, with the two girls.
Mr. White, on that, on this point, you know, I'm kind of caught in the dilemma of there were conflicting facts. I mean, we had this girl's statements, we saw the corner house video, we heard mother's testimony, and you know, and many other facts. It feels like you're asking us to reweigh the district court's finding on the credibility. Why am I wrong?
Your Honor, I think you're wrong because we're not asking the court to reweigh credibility. What we're asking the court to do is to undertake an evaluation of the record as a whole and to evaluate whether that record as a whole gets you to the clear and convincing evidence standard that is necessary to establish the termination of parental rights. And here, so you end up weighing in undertaking that evaluation, this court has to evaluate whether the mere statement of the girls, which is all that the district court relied upon, reaches that clear and convincing evidence standard when it is confronted with all of the evidence that points in a different direction, or the lack of evidence that points in the direction of mother being involved. There's no physical evidence here. Even though mother allowed social services to come into the house, go wherever they wanted, they rummaged through the laundry hampers, they looked at the beds, they smelled the beds, they did everything that they wished to do, and found no physical evidence to corroborate the girl's story, even though the girls were fairly specific about where this incident had occurred.
Mr. White, can I stop you there? Because I want to come back to the question Judge Berkman raised, because when you were explaining our standard of review, you noted her statements, but then you said in light of basically the contrary evidence, and that seems to be you asking us to reweigh. Don't we need to look at the evidence that the state presented and to see whether or not that evidence was enough to meet the clear and convincing evidence standard?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that this court has to look at the record as a whole, and the case law on that is rather explicit and has been around for decades. And so this court has the obligation to not only look at the positive evidence, if you will, for the district court's finding, but also look at the negative evidence and then determine whether or not, as a matter of evaluation of that, that the clear and convincing evidence standard is reached. And again, given all of the contrary evidence that's laid out pretty carefully in our brief, I think that when you undertake that analysis, you come to the conclusion that in fact a mistake was made here and that the record does not get you to the clear and convincing evidence standard.
Mr. White, under the standard we have here, it's clear and convincing evidence, but in a typical criminal case where there are allegations of sexual abuse, the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. And under even under that much higher standard than clear and convincing evidence, the testimony of a victim can be enough to meet that standard. So why isn't it enough in this case where the standard is clear and convincing?
Your Honor, I think it's not enough in this case because we have all of the contrary evidence that was submitted. And when you undertake that evaluation, you come, I think, to the conclusion that the record as a whole does not get you to the point where the trial court's finding is met by the record or is established by the record as a whole to that clear and convincing evidence standard.
So, Mr. White, one thing you argue is that the mom herself was a victim of abuse, so she couldn't have done this. But was there any expert evidence presented to support that, or is that just a supposition you put out, you know, you added to your brief?
Your Honor, the problem here is that there is no expert testimony anywhere in this record. And so there's no discussion by any of the parties of or any expert about, as I argue in other sections of the brief, about whether the girl suffered any harm from this conduct, whether it's going to have any lasting impact on them. And so part of the failure of the evidence in this case, I think, Your Honor, is not only in relation to the evidence of whether it meets the clear and convincing evidence standard that the events occurred, but also whether it meets the whether there's the proof necessary to establish that there was a violation of the specific statutory chapter or statutory section that the county is trying to utilize here. And recognize
I'm sorry, finish your sentence.
Okay. Let's again recognize that under the law, the county cannot use other sections. Instead, we have to look to the section that's specifically set forth in the petition, and that is simply subdivision 1B 5 here. I thought I had that right, but wanted to double check. And so under that section, there has to be some evidence that there are conditions in the home that are causing harm to the children. And here we simply have nothing in this record anywhere that establishes that, whether by expert testimony or otherwise.
Well, but then part of the context here is the challenge, because we have a situation where your client admitted that, in fact, that statutory basis for termination was supported by clear and convincing evidence, namely the failure of the reasonable efforts. And so we're in the position where our first question is, did your client violate one of the conditions of the stayed termination agreement? Then does it justify revocation of the stay? And so, you know, in that context, I agree with you that the focus of the hearing in October or whenever it was not so much on the underlying statutory basis as it was on the question of, you know, whether the conditions were violated. If this court were to conclude that the district court did not err in finding that the sexual abuse occurred, would that in fact constitute a violation of the stayed termination agreement, Mr. White?
No, Your Honor. And I think that's for two particular reasons. First, the allegations of sexual misconduct or the was never raised at any point in these proceedings, until the specific incidents that occurred that led to the two hearings that ultimately resulted in the termination. So you have a situation here where you have kind of two levels of problems with where the district court took this case. The first level of problem is, even assuming that the misconduct occurred by mother, It was never part of the case plan. It was never part of any of the parenting assessments. It was never anywhere in the record. And both the Supreme Court and this court have been extremely clear that in evaluating the termination of parental rights, it is the obligation of the county to undertake the to set forth the issues that they're concerned about and then to seek to address them. And even in this case, on prior occasions, as the county relates in detail in its brief, the county had taken steps to modify the case planning when new issues arose, and they did not do that in this case. So I think that's problem number one with what they did. Problem number two with what they did is that it is undeniable that there were no services offered to mother or to the girls. Even the district court makes that factual finding in relation to the allegations of sexual abuse.
Well, I thought that the girls had some sort of a therapy seed program or something like that. And in fact, the therapist very early on in 2018, when the girls were removed from the home, was asked about their sexualized behavior. So to some extent, the girls were offered services, weren't they?
Well, the girls were offered it, Your Honor, and we know that the issue was raised with the therapist. The problem is we don't know whatever happened. The therapist simply put it in the back of the therapist's mind for something to raise later if it ever became a continuing issue? Was it something that the therapist addressed specifically with the girls and talked for a long time about? What happened when that issue got mentioned to the therapist? We don't know that. There's nothing in this record. And we have the similar problem with whatever happened between mother and her therapist. Mother denied that it happened, that she ever discussed it with her therapist, but it is certainly the record is absolutely clear that the county never raised it with mother, that the allegation that mother was never involved or accused of having any kind of inappropriate sexual contact with her children, and that she never received any services related to that.
Can I interrupt just for a minute? Yes. So if the clear and convincing standard is met on the sexual abuse, the conditions were the programming, it was modified a number of times, correct?
Correct.
And mother never raised this issue, even though she was offered mental health counseling and in fact had a lot of services, didn't she? So are we just to say the burden is 100% on the county and that they have to then start the clock all over again, in essence, if mother engages in some new kind of conduct that warrants a CHIPS intervention? I mean, we are procedurally in this case where she's already admitted, you know, to the statutory standards for termination of parental rights. And so it is just the conditions of the stay that we're dealing with at this point.
Correct, Your Honor. But if you look at the undisputed testimony in this case, there were 20-some requirements for mother under the terms of the stay. Even the social workers testified that mother was complying in all respects, except for a couple of keeping the kids out late one night to go to Walmart, was complying in all respects with the conditions of the stay until this new issue arose. And so, yes, I think, Your Honor, if there is a new issue like this, then it's up to the district court to say, all right, let's get some testimony in about what is a reasonable time period, what's appropriate for mother, for us to do with mother, what's it appropriate for us to do with the children in order to address this new issue. And I would suggest that this court, as recently as earlier this year on March 30th, in the Welfare of the Children of SJK, said exactly that. When you said the district court characterized the county's lack of contact as father's fault, but this finding contradicts what the child protection statutes require, that the county, and it's italicized in your opinion, must make reasonable efforts to reunify the family. The burden is on the county.
Mr. White, I have a follow-up question on that. Let's assume for the sake of argument that the sexual allegations are true. If that's the case, why doesn't that meet the, why doesn't that violate the requirement that she meet the children's needs for safety and stability? That is one of the 20 conditions, and that seems to have been violated if those sexual abuse allegations are in fact true.
Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. Can I answer the question?
You may answer the question.
Thank you. Judge, I think the problem here is that it is such a broad category within the conditions that it becomes so huge that it is a way for the county to terminate parental rights. If there is any kind of deficiency that mother might exhibit, if the children had gotten out again, for example, and were found down at the gas station again, that would be a violation of that broad provision. And so what we have here is a circumstance where the county failed to provide the services specific, as is required by the law, specific to the conditions in the family. And that broader category simply overwhelms everything. And so it cannot be the basis on which termination occurs without some specificity within that categorization.
All right, thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We will now hear from counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. Are you able to hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I am Sherry Haley, Jackson County Attorney. I represent the state of Minnesota and Des Moines Valley Health and Human Services, which was the agency in this particular child protection and TPR proceedings. I think that the court recognizes that this is a case that involved a lot of services, a lot of different issues as we went through, and that over 17 months and a long period of time that we continue to do ongoing case planning to keep assessing and readdressing mom's basic parenting skills that were lacking. At the very beginning, it was identified that she struggled in the most basic of parenting skills, including adequate supervision for these very small children, keeping things sanitary, and then also safety issues within the home and in the community. And because of the uncertainty of her skills, she was offered parenting capacity assessment and a trauma assessment very early on to try to figure out what was the best ways to teach her these basic skills and also what other deficits occurred or were there. The efforts in this case were beyond reasonable efforts in a particular child protection case. And because of her past traumas, it was recognized that her learning was a little bit slower, that it took her longer to implement things. And so part of what we were weighing when determining whether or not to enter into this stay was whether or not she was putting forth those efforts to learn these skills. And the agency, along with mother, did come to an agreement to stay adjudication, which the court even noted and is in the record regarding that disposition hearing about how exceptional that is. And it's exceptional because typically we hit timelines and we look at services and whether or not things have been corrected and proceed to termination pretty quickly. But here, because of her past traumas, because she was trying to make those efforts to learn and was making slow progress in those areas, we wanted to recognize that and continue working with her to see if we could get these children back home.
Well, given what you've just said, Ms. Haley, and I agree with you, this is a mother who was working very hard, had deficits, but was working very hard to address the conditions, and the county agency and the court agreed to give her more time to do so. My biggest concern is, okay, these allegations are made, and yes, they are serious. She still had, what, 4 or 5 months left on this 6-month stay termination. Why not see if that issue can be addressed or do more? I mean, why the sudden rush to termination when no service had really been provided to mother on the question of sexual boundaries or behavior?
So a couple of things about that, Your Honor. First, It was a complete lack of recognizing, once again, her children's needs versus her own. And that was a common theme that we were trying to work through her individual therapy and through teaching her in the in-home therapy about what is appropriate in interaction for her children. These in-home therapists, if you go through the review reports and the court's orders through the disposition, we're teaching such things as even basic, how to play with her children appropriately, how to interact with them, because she was lacking those skills in the beginning. Not recognizing that sexually abusing the children after she had been a victim of sexual abuse, had identified it as a major trauma in her life, and then engaging in that against these children indicated that she was back towards the beginning of putting her own needs and impulses before the kids. The other concern was this was the second attempt at a trial home visit. This one was approximately 4.5 to 5 days. And in that very short window of time, she had already abused these children again. That was seriously concerning. And with how much time these kids had already been placed out of her home and in light of their ages, and the fact that we were running up against this time where they were starting to be out of the home longer than they had ever been with her. It was significant that at that point, giving more time, trying to start on a whole new issue with how slow her progress was with everything else, that being able to address that in that time did not seem reasonable. Additionally, the kids were back out of the home again. The idea of that stay, and in the disposition hearing, it was addressed that the kids were going to get home on the trial home visit and that these timelines were being extended with the understanding that they were being extended while the children were actually in her care, while she was parenting them, while she was providing for them and meeting their needs. That's a different environment than them being back in foster care.
Ms. Haley, I want to follow up on that question a little bit because you mentioned a couple times the slow progress she's made, but at the same time, my understanding of the record, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is of the 20 or so conditions, she was making progress on all of them. And so most, if not all of them. And so I think this is a different situation than if you have somebody who simply is not making any progress whatsoever, and it doesn't seem like the county's efforts are, the county's making reasonable efforts, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be any change anytime soon. And she seemed receptive to the programs and to the assistance that she had been provided. So my question is, if this new issue came up, and it's not uncommon for somebody who's a victim of sexual abuse or domestic abuse to exhibit those as an adult themselves, why didn't the county undertake steps to try to address her issues after the October 5th, 2019 incident, when there still were several months to see if some steps could have been taken as part of her rehabilitation?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that I'm going to briefly repeat that the big difference was under the stay, it was expected the children would be home on a trial home visit. Our timelines for them being continuing out of the home were passed. And continuing them or placing them back out of the home, we felt changed the circumstances significantly as to whether or not the stay remained appropriate at this time, because they no longer were going to be able to be in the home. The level of contact was going to have to be rolled way back to very supervised visits instead of the overnight visits and the unsupervised visits she had been having. And all of a sudden we're taking this relationship and this bonding that we had helped build up between her and the children and were building and having to dial it way back again. And the children would have that experience loss again. To put the children through the process of trying to build that back up on the chance that she might be able to make progress regarding sexual assault or sexual impulse control in a relatively short amount of time seemed to be very high risk for the children's overall health. The other thing, though, that I want the court to look at is, yes, there's a lot of conditions in that stay, but they're broken down into tiny, small, basic conditions. And they're done so because of the concrete thinking. And so many of those conditions are fairly simplistic and are expected of the average adult: that she maintain a home, that she was able to live, you know, independent of having people who were unsafe coming in and caring for her children, that she made appropriate daycare arrangements and worked with the agency about that. A lot of them were very basic skills. The other things were complying with going to her individual therapy to keep working on her issues and working with the in-home therapists. Yes, she was compliant with those things, but it was for a very short period of time. Those stay conditions had only been in place for roughly 4 weeks when the trial home visit had to be ended because she sexually abused the children. Compliance for that short of a period on those more basic parts, I don't think overrides her non-compliance with the most fundamental issue that we had. And I think that it is important to note that the court did specifically point out to her that the most fundamental focus was that she was going to provide for the basic care and safety of these children. The court pointed that out during the disposition hearing to her to make sure she understood that that was the most important factor.
But given, as Mr. White argued, you know, the provisions that the district court found a mother to have violated, it were so broad. I mean, the category of not consistently meeting your children's need. I mean, given the fact that sexual abuse was identified by mother as one of her underlying issues, how can she reasonably read that list and read the notion of meeting her children's needs as having anything to do with sexual conduct or behavior?
Your Honor, I think that she can reasonably read that list and understand that safety, which was listed, and stability of her children, not causing them to be placed out of the home again, is related. And I also think that based on the fact that she was able to identify that her being sexually abused was traumatizing, was harmful to her, that she would be able to then recognize that sexually abusing the children would be a violation of their safety, a violation of their basic needs. We're not trying to say that she had dirty dishes in the sink and therefore the house was not sanitary or stable or anything like that. This is a major violation of the children's personal safety and of their well-being. And she engaged in that in a very short period of time of having those kids unsupervised. I do think that I would request that the court look carefully at the standard of review in this case. I think a lot of what is being requested here is basically that this court retry this case based on the record and reweigh all of the evidence. And I do hope that the court remembers that the district court was able to see these witnesses while they testified, the hand gestures. And we did go back in the record and try to describe that, but it's not the same thing. And we have children here who made spontaneous, well, the one child made a spontaneous disclosure of this sexual abuse as soon as she was safe with her foster parents and knew she was with them. She then was able to, or impulsively on her own while describing this without being asked to, demonstrated her version of what happened to these foster parents. And she remained consistent in the various times that she was questioned regarding what happened as to what had happened. I think there is clear and convincing evidence that supports, there's sufficient evidence to support the court's findings of clear and convincing evidence, and that the court's discretion was not abused here. The court was very carefully weighing these factors. I understand what Mr. White is arguing regarding lack of evidence, but the victims here gave multiple statements. They were consistent with each other, and they're very young children. To find those consistencies with two children, I think they are, well, and it's in the record that they're too young to have tried to collaborate or create that. And that, yes, mom had made progress. She had gone to appointments and all that, but she has a responsibility to implement the changes that she's learning in these services, implement the lessons that she's learning, to meet those basic needs of her children. And she failed to do so when she sexually abused them during the trial home visit.
Any additional questions from members of the panel?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Haley. Mr. White, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I think there are two points that I would like to emphasize here, and they relate to calling the court's attention to specific court decisions and the impact of those here. The first of those is MDO, which held and imposed on the county the obligation to provide to the parent a list or identification of the issues that the county believes are significant. And MDO goes through a rather extensive discussion of that requirement from the Supreme Court, and ultimately concludes that, and I'll quote it here, from page 377, the county's expectations seem especially daunting considering the county's admitted failure to provide services, counseling, or assistance to aid Ostland in coming to grips with her conduct. It never told Ostland what programs at the Shakopee Institution would be appropriate for her to satisfy the case plan. And then it goes on to discuss a few more of the specific facts in MDO. And we have exactly the same situation here, where the county never did anything to raise this issue with mother, either early on or subsequently. There's no expert testimony about it in our record.
But we do know that the county provided parenting and other therapy to mother, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But the problem is that we have a new issue here, a new concern that the county is raising. And that leads me to the second point that is articulated in part in TR, which is in our reply brief at page 13, the quotation from it. But if you look at TR, one of the aspects of TR, and there are a number of other cases that where this court and other courts and the Supreme Court have reached the same conclusion, that the statute says that the court can decide that services are futile. What you heard from counsel for the county was, we made the decision that services wouldn't do any good. We made the decision that the children had been out of the home long enough. We made the decision that we shouldn't extend time periods here or otherwise provide specific services to mom and children. They never went to the court and asked for that to happen.
Mr. White, on that point, I'm not so sure that the record supports that position, because this incident occurred on October 5th, and the district court actually ordered an end to the trial home visits on October 22nd, just a couple weeks later. So I believe the district court actually did take action fairly quickly after the incident, correct?
Correct, Your Honor, but that was simply to terminate the home visits. That did not address the new issue, the sexual misconduct of mother and sexual boundaries.
Well, how does that not address it? Because if there aren't going to be any home visits, I mean, And to opposing counsel's point, this is a major issue. This isn't just a issue of minor import. This is a very, very significant one that could likely be detrimental to the children's welfare.
Two responses. One, Your Honor, or three responses. Yes, it's a major issue. Two, you put the key word in there, likely to be. There is nothing in this record that established that it was or will be in the future. And third, Your Honor.
But to that point, counsel, if you look at the, there's case law out there that actually says the county does not have to show actual harm. All they have to do is to show that the conduct is likely to be detrimental. And sexual abuse, I think almost by definition, how is that not likely to be detrimental to a child's welfare?
Well, Your Honor, I think there has to be some evidence to establish that, and there was none here, especially given the ages of these children and the way that they were able to apparently deal with it.
What about their acting out of what exactly had happened? How is that not detrimental to a child?
Well, Your Honor, again, you and I can speculate that it's detrimental or not, but you need some evidence, some testimony that establishes that, I think. You don't get the presumption, and the Supreme Court and this court have repeatedly held, just because you're a drug abuser, just because you have other mental health issues or whatever, that does not lead to termination. There has to be some evidence that it's triggering issues or problems with the children, and that doesn't exist.
So, but you had here you had testimony from the county, you had the guardian ad litem. I mean, what more should they have had? And then one other thing is, didn't the court, it seems in reading the court's findings and conclusions, that the court did make a finding that reasonable services were continued. So it was something addressed by the district court, correct?
Well, Your Honor, the court found that reasonable services were continued, but the court also found that there were no services related to the sexual misconduct or boundary issues that mother might have suffered from. And I think that's the critical issue here. It's that if you look at TR and the other cases, you'll find that in fact, there have to be services provided, or the trial court has to say specifically services would be futile, and that was simply not done here.
Are the cases you're relying on, do any of those arise in the context of an agreed to stayed termination?
None that I can think of off the top of my head, Your Honor. As Ms. Haley pointed out, this is a pretty unique circumstance, and I see I'm out of time. So,
do either Judge Reyes or Judge Siegel have additional questions?
No.
Do not.
Okay, then thank you both, counsel, for your helpful arguments and for your patience in dealing with this new method of providing argument and giving the court a chance to ask you questions. Your participation is greatly appreciated. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.